but that will not help us. You may make a fire if you can, answered Gandalf. If there are any watchers that can endure this storm, then they can see us, fire or no. But though they had brought wood and kindlings by the advice of Boromir, it passed the skill of elf or even dwarf to strike a flame that would hold amid the swirling wind or catch in the wet fuel. At last, reluctantly, Gandalf himself took a hand. Picking up a faggot, he held it aloft for a moment, and then, with a word of command, "Now are an edraith amen," he thrust the end of his staff into the midst of it. At once a great spout of green and blue flame sprang out, and the wood flared and sputtered.
"If there are any to see, then I at least am revealed to them," he said. "I have written, Gandalf is here, in signs that all can read from Rivendell to the mouths of Anduin." But the company cared no longer for watchers or unfriendly eyes. Their hearts were rejoiced to see the light of the fire. The wood burned merrily, and though all round it the snow hissed and pools of slush crept under their feet, they warmed their hands gladly at the blaze. There they stood, stooping in a circle round the little dancing and blowing flames. A red light was on their tired and anxious faces. Behind them the night was like a black wall. But the wood was burning fast, and the snow still fell. The fire burned low, and the last faggot was thrown on.
"The night is getting old," said Aragorn. "The dawn is not far off."
"If any dawn can pierce these clouds," said Gimli.
Boromir stepped out of the circle and stared up into the blackness.
"The snow is growing less," he said, "and the wind is quieter."
Frodo gazed wearily at the flakes still falling out of the dark to be revealed white for a moment in the light of the dying fire. But for a long time he could see no sign of their slackening. Then suddenly, as sleep was beginning to creep over him again, he was aware that the wind had indeed fallen, and the flakes were becoming larger and fewer. Very slowly, a dim light began to grow. At last the snow stopped altogether. As the light grew stronger, it showed a silent, shrouded world. Below their refuge were white humps and domes and shapeless deeps, beneath which the path that they had trodden was altogether lost. But the heights above were hidden in great clouds, still heavy with the threat of snow. Gimli looked up and shook his head.
"Carathras has not forgiven us," he said. "He has more snow yet to fling at us. If we go on, the sooner we go back and down, the better." To this all agreed, but their retreat was now difficult. It might well prove impossible. Only a few paces from the ashes of their fire, the snow lay many feet deep, higher than the heads of the hobbits. In places it had been scooped and piled by the wind to great drifts against the cliff.
"If Gandalf could go before us with a bright flame, he might melt a path for you," said Legolas. The storm had troubled him little, and he alone of the company remained still light of heart.
"If elves could fly over mountains, they might fetch the sun to save us," answered Gandalf. "But I must have something to work on. I cannot burn snow."
"Well," said Boromir, "when heads are at a loss, bodies must serve, as we say in my country. The strongest of us must seek a way. See, though all is now snow-clad, our path, as we came up, turned about that shoulder of rock down yonder. It was there that the snow first began to burden us. If we could reach that point, maybe it would prove easier beyond. It is no more than a furlong off, I guess."
"Then let us force a path thither, you and I," said Aragorn.
Aragorn was the tallest of the company, but Boromir, little less in height, was broader and heavier in build. He led the way, and Aragorn followed him. Slowly they moved off, and were soon toiling heavily. In places the snow was breast high, and often Boromir seemed to be swimming or burrowing with his great arms rather than walking. Legolas watched them for a while with a smile upon his lips, and then he turned to the others.
"The strongest must seek a way, say you, but I say, let a ploughman plough, but choose an otter for swimming, and for running light over grass and leaf or over snow, an elf. With that he sprang forth nimbly, and then Frodo noticed, as if for the first time, though he had long known it, that the elf had no boots, but wore only light shoes, as he always did, and his feet made little imprint in the snow. "Farewell," he said to Gandalf, "I go to find the sun." Then, swift as a runner over firm sand, he shot away, and quickly overtaking the toiling men, with a wave of his hand he passed them, and sped into the distance, and vanished round the rocky turn. The others waited huddled together, watching until Boromir and Aragorn dwindled into black specks in the whiteness. At length they, too, passed from sight. The time dragged on, the clouds lowered, and now a few flakes of snow came curling down again. An hour, maybe, went by, though it seemed far longer, and then at last they saw Legolas coming back. At the same time, Boromir and Aragorn reappeared round the bend far behind him and came labouring up the slope. "Well," cried Legolas as he ran up, "I've not brought the sun. She's walking in the blue fields of the south, and a little wreath of snow on this Redhorn hillock troubles her not at all. But I've brought back a gleam of good hope for those who are doomed to go on feet. There is the greatest wind rift of all just beyond the turn, and there our strong men are almost buried. They despaired until I returned and told them that the drift was little wider than a wall, and on the other side the snow suddenly grows less, while further down it is no more than a white coverlet to cool a hobbit's toes."
"Ah, it's as I said," growled Gimli. "It was no ordinary storm. It's the ill will of Carathras. He does not love elves and dwarves, and that drift was laid to cut off our escape."
"But happily your Carathras has forgotten that you have men with you," said Boromir, who came up at that moment, "and doughty men too, if I may say it, though lesser men with spades might have served you better. Still, we've thrust a lane through the drift, and for that all here may be grateful who cannot run as light as elves."
"But how are we to get down there, even if you have cut through the drift?" said Pippin, voicing the thought of all the hobbits.
"Have hope," said Boromir. "I am weary, but I still have some strength left, and Aragorn too. We will bear the little folk. The others, no doubt, will make shift to tread the path behind us. Come, Master Peregrine, I'll begin with you." He lifted up the hobbit. "Cling to my back. I shall need my arms," he said, and strode forward. Aragorn with Merry came behind.
Pippin marvelled at his strength, seeing the passage that he had already forced with no other tool than his great limbs. Even now, burdened as he was widening the track of those who followed, thrusting the snow aside as he went. They came at length to the great drift. It was flung across the mountain path like a sheer and sudden wall, and its crest, sharp as if shaped with knives, reared up more than twice the height of Boromir. But through the middle a passage had been beaten, rising and falling like a bridge. On the far side Merry and Pippin were set down, and there they waited with Legolas for the rest of the company to arrive. After a while Boromir returned, carrying Sam. Behind in the narrow but now well-trodden track came Gandalf, leading Bill with Gimli perched among the baggage. Last came Aragorn, carrying Frodo. They passed through the lane, but hardly had Frodo touched the ground when with a deep rumble there rolled down a fall of stones and slithering snow. The spray of it half blinded the company as they crouched against the cliff, and when the air cleared again they saw that the path was blocked behind them.
"Enough, enough," cried Gimli. "We're departing as quickly as we may."
And indeed, with that last stroke, the malice of the mountain seemed to be expended, as if Carathras was satisfied that the invaders had been beaten off and would not dare to return. The threat of snow lifted, the clouds began to break, and the light grew broader. As Legolas had reported, they found that the snow became steadily more shallow as they went down, so that even the hobbits could trudge along. Soon they all stood once more on the flat shelf at the head of the steep slope, where they had felt the first flakes of snow the night before. The morning was now far advanced. From the high place they looked back westwards over the lower lands. Far away in the tumble of country that lay at the foot of the mountain was the dell from which they had started to climb the pass. Frodo's legs ached. He was chilled to the bone and hungry, and his head was dizzy as he thought of the long and painful march downhill. Black specks swam before his eyes. He rubbed them, but the black specks remained. In the distance below him, but still high above the lower foothills, dark dots were circling in the air.
"The birds again," said Aragorn, pointing down. "That cannot be helped now," said Gandalf. "Whether they are good or evil, or have nothing to do with us at all, we must go down at once. Not even on the knees of Carathras will we wait for another nightfall."
A cold wind flowed down behind them as they turned their backs on the Redhorn Gate and stumbled wearily down the slope.
Carathras had defeated them.
Chapter 4. A Journey in the Dark. It was evening, and the grey light was again waning fast when they halted for the night. They were very weary. The mountains were veiled in deepening dusk, and the wind was cold. Gandalf spared them one more mouthful each of the Mirovar of Rivendell. When they had eaten some food, he called a council.
"We cannot, of course, go on again tonight," he said. "The attack on the Redhorn Gate has tired us out, and we must rest here for a while."
"And then where are we to go?" asked Frodo.
"We still have our journey and our errand before us," answered Gandalf. "We have no choice but to go on or to return to Rivendell."
Pippin's face brightened visibly at the mere mention of return to Rivendell. Merry and Sam looked away hopefully, but Aragorn and Boromir made no sign. Frodo looked troubled. "I wish I was back there," he said. "But how can I return without shame, unless there is indeed no other way, and we are already defeated?"
"You are right, Frodo," said Gandalf. "To go back is to admit defeat, and to face worse defeat to come. If we go back now, then the ring must remain there. We shall not be able to set out again. Then sooner or later Rivendell will be besieged, and after a brief and bitter time it will be destroyed. The Ringwraiths are deadly enemies, but they are only shadows yet of the power and terror they would possess if the ruling ring was on their master's hand again."
"Then we must go on, if there's a way," said Frodo with a sigh. Sam sank back into gloom.
"There is a way that we may attempt," said Gandalf. "I thought from the beginning, when I first considered this journey, that we should try it. But it is not a pleasant way, and I have not spoken of it to the company before. Aragorn was against it until the pass over the mountains had at least been tried."
"If it's a worse road than the Redhorn Gate, then it must be evil indeed," said Merry. "But you'd better tell us all about it, and let us know the worst at once."
"The road that I speak of leads to the mines of Moria," said Gandalf. Only Gimli lifted up his head. A smouldering fire was in his eyes. On all the others a dread fell at the mention of that name. Even to the hobbits it was a legend of vague fear.
"The road may lead to Moria, but how can we hope that it will lead through Moria?" said Aragorn darkly.
"It is a name of ill omen," said Boromir. "Nor do I see the need to go there. If we cannot cross the mountains, let us journey southwards until we come to the Gap of Rohan, where men are friendly to my people, taking the road that I followed on my way hither. Or we might pass by and cross the ice and into Langstrand and Lebenin, and so come to Gondor from the regions nigh to the sea."
"Things have changed since you came north, Boromir," answered Gandalf. "Did you not hear what I told you of Saruman? With him I may have business of my own ere all is over. But the ring must not come near Isengard, if that can be by any means prevented. The Gap of Rohan is closed to us while we go with the bearer. As for the longer road, we cannot afford the time. We might spend a year in such a journey, and we should pass through many lands that are empty and harbourless. Yet they would not be safe. The watchful eyes of both Saruman and of the enemy are on them. When you came north, Boromir, you were in the enemy's eyes only one stray wanderer from the south, and a matter of small concern to him.
His mind was busy with the pursuit of the ring. But you return now as a member of the ring's company, and you are in peril as long as you remain with us. The danger will increase with every league that we go south under the naked sky. Since our open attempt on the mountain pass, our plight has become more desperate, I fear. I see now little hope, if we do not soon vanish from sight for a while and cover our trail. Therefore I advise that we should go neither over the mountains nor round them, but under them. There is a road at any rate that the enemy will least expect us to take.
We do not know what he expects, said Boromir. He may watch all roads, likely and unlikely. In that case, to enter Moria would be to walk into a trap, hardly better than knocking at the gates of the Dark Tower itself. The name of Moria is Black.
You speak of what you do not know when you liken Moria to the stronghold of Sauron, answered Gandalf. I alone of you have ever been in the dungeons of the Dark Lord, and only in his older and lesser dwelling in Dol Guldur. Those who pass the gates of Barad-dûr do not return. But I would not lead you into Moria if there were no hope of coming out again. If there are orcs there, it may prove ill for us, that is true. But most of the orcs of the Misty Mountains were scattered or destroyed in the Battle of Five Armies. The eagles report that orcs are gathering again from afar, but there is a hope that Moria is still free.
There is even a chance that dwarves are there, and that in some deep hall of his father's, Balin, son of Fundin, may be found. However it may prove, one must tread the path that need chooses.
I will tread the path with you, Gandalf, said Gimli. I will go and look on the halls of Durin, whatever may wait there, if you can find the doors that are shut.
Good, Gimli, said Gandalf. You encourage me. We will seek the hidden doors together, and we will come through. In the ruins of the dwarves, a dwarf's head will be less easy to bewilder than elves or men or hobbits. Yet it will not be the first time that I have been to Moria. I sought there long for Thrain, son of Thror, after he was lost. I passed through, and I came out again alive.
I too once passed the Dimrul Gate, said Aragorn quietly. But though I also came out again, the memory is very evil. I don't wish to enter Moria a second time.
And I don't wish to enter it even once, said Pippin.
Nor me, muttered Sam.
Of course not, said Gandalf. Who would? But the question is, who will follow me if I lead you there?
I will, said Gimli eagerly.
I will, said Aragorn heavily. You followed my lead almost to disaster in the snow, and have said no word of blame.
I will follow your lead now, if this last warning does not move you. It's not of the ring, nor of us others that I'm thinking now, but of you, Gandalf. And I say to you, if you pass the doors of Moria, beware.
I will not go, said Boromir, not unless the vote of the whole company is against me. What do Legolas and the little folk say? The ring-bearer's voice surely should be heard.
I do not wish to go to Moria, said Legolas.
The hobbit said nothing. Sam looked at Frodo. At last Frodo spoke.
I do not wish to go, he said, but neither do I wish to refuse the advice of Gandalf. I beg that there should be no vote until we've slept on it. Gandalf will get votes easier in the light of the morning than in this cold gloom. How the wind howls! At these words all fell into silent thought. They heard the wind hissing among the rocks and trees, and there was a howling and wailing round them in the empty spaces of the night. Suddenly Aragorn leaped to his feet.
How the wind howls! He cried. It is howling with wolf voices! The wargs have come west of the mountains.
Need we wait until morning, then? Said Gandalf. It's as I said, the hunt is up. Even if we live to see the dawn, who now will wish to journey south by night with the wild wolves on his trail?
How far is Moria? Asked Boromir. There was a door southwest of Carathras, some 15